Broadcasting from First Assembly of God, this is First AG Podcast.
Adolescence is something to show for it. How many of you want to live a life and have something to show for it? At the end of your days, at the end of your time, I want to be able to look back and say it mattered that I walked on the spinning globe. It mattered that my life was lived. And we're going to talk a little bit about that. Now, last week, we started with this idea of asking better questions and how sometimes the beginning of the year and the first part of the year, everybody's all about resolutions and everybody's kind of, I'm going to be this and I'm going to do this and I'm going to do all these things. And statistics say that by the end of the first month, 40% of them are completely shot and we've already given up on 40% of them. They say that by the end of the year, only 8% stuck with it for the whole year. And so the odds are not really very good. In those kind of things. So here's my encourage me message. If you're already struggling in your New Year's resolution, just give up. No, don't do that. Don't do that. You stick with it and you keep pressing on. But here's the thing. We all want to live a life that matters. And we're in a season really of self-improvement. And the reason that this is worth talking about is, again, so often these great goals that we have, these wonderful ideas that we have starting in January and February, as we get into the year, they start dropping like flies as we're going along. And I just want to say that there are some things that are worth fighting for. There are things that are worth, even if you stumble and struggle, getting back on your feet, picking it up again, and pressing on. And it's worth doing, and it's worth doing well, and to keep doing those things. And I was thinking about this past week. Jesus, he never really had to come up with a different resolution. Every year we pick new things. Jesus kind of said, I'm just kind of going to do what I did last year. I think it works pretty well. And so that's kind of the way he lives. So this first part of the year is all about self-improvement. What should I do about me? How do I make me a better person? And those are not wrong things. Those are not bad things. We should all eat healthier. We should all lose weight. We should all, and I say that after Valentine's weekend when chocolates and special dinners were out there. Do some extra sit-ups this week. You'll be all right. But we should eat healthier. We should lose weight. We should save more money. We should prioritize our families. And all of those things are very good things to do. But if you have ever had someone do something for you in a time of need, time when you didn't know what you were going to do, but God stirred somebody's heart and they came and they gave or they served or they showed up with a word and maybe it was a physical word of encouragement. Maybe they physically got in their car and drove to your house and did something for you, or maybe God just laid you on their heart and they picked up the phone and called you and just said, hey, listen, I saw you the other day and just something's been stirring in my heart and I want to share it with you and encourage you. And the word came in and it was just the right word at the right moment and it changed your life. It was just what you needed to hear at that moment. You ever experienced anything like that? If that has ever happened, it is because someone asked a different question of their life. They didn't say, what can I do about me? Or what can I do to make me a better person? They said, you know what? What can I do around me? God, what do you want me to do? Who do you want me to encourage? Who do you want me to bless? Who do you want me to lift up? And I personally in my life have been impacted by this. People who come and give, people who come and bless, people who encouraged or shared a word that was such a God thing in a God moment. And I wish I could tell you about every single one of them, but they've just been amazing. Sometimes in the hallway, I tell folks all the time, listen, some of the best ministry happens on the way to do your ministry. Hallway ministry, it's parking lot ministry, it's grocery store ministry, it's you're on the way to do what God wants you to do, and there's people who pop in, and sometimes you're the blessing to them, and sometimes they're the blessing to you. But how many know it happens all the time? Somebody gives, and it's a God thing and a God moment, and it happened because someone didn't say, what can I do about me? But someone said, God, what can I do around me? God, what do you want me to do today? And God laid you on their heart. There's an old saying that says, what man is a man who does not make the world better? What a great quote. And so the question we're going to begin asking today is this. I told you last week, what breaks your heart? We're kind of going to continue in that, but the new question I want you to write down today is, how do you know what you should do? Because I find this a lot, that when people don't know what they should do, there's always someone willing to tell them what they should do. And usually, that benefits the person telling them and not really the person being told. And I think we need to wait and we need to hear from God. I think we need to let God tell us what to do. It can be affirmed by other people, blessed by other people, encouraged by other people, but it's an amazing thing what happens. And so last weekend we looked at the story from Nehemiah. He gets information about Jerusalem. It grips his heart. And I asked you to pray about that thing all week. What is it that breaks your heart? Because you look around the world and there's a lot of needs. You look in our community, there's a lot of needs. You look around the place and the truth is there's needs everywhere and there is no way that we can meet every need. So we can't really change the world, but you may be able to change one person's world. Encourage someone, bless someone, love someone that needs to be encouraged or blessed or loved. And when you start to think about the needs of our nations and your community and your neighborhoods and your schools, what is the one thing? What is that group of people? What is that one area that grips your heart and that single thing that just grips your spirit? That when you hear things and you see other things, you go, oh man, that's a shame. Somebody ought to do something about that. But when this thing is talked about, there's something that just kind of rises up inside of you that says, I can't go past this moment. I can't go past this thing. Somebody needs to do something, and I'm willing to do whatever I can. These are such critical things, and you think someone has to do something about this. And I think so often that answers the question, what breaks your heart? So I'm going to give you a statement or a sentence. I want you to write this down, and it goes like this. At the end of my life, I would like people to line up and thank me for... the end of your life, what would you like people to line up and thank you for? You ever thought about that? At the end of my days, what impact will I have had? At the end of my days, what impact will I have left on the lives of those around me? What will people say? And I think that this is, it's an amazing thing because outside of the regular and normal, I'm going to love my wife and or my husband, or whatever lines up with you. I'm going to love my family, and I'm going to love my kids. And those are good, and those are regular things. But what is that one thing outside of that for which people would line up and thank you for at the end of your life? See, the problem with beginning to ask ourselves the question, what breaks our heart, is this. We come to the place of realizing and understanding that it's going to require something of you. And I think this is where a lot of people will back away. This is where a lot of people would kind of slow their roll a little bit because we shrink back because of this type of thing, because somebody needs to do something about this, but what can I do? Well, I don't have the time. I don't have the resource, Pastor. I don't have the energy anymore. I don't have this. I don't have that. And we come up with all of these excuses why we can't do something when we know in our hearts where to do something. And I want to be very clear when I say this, because if you move in the direction of what breaks your heart, even in a small way, it's going to require something of your life. Now, I'm not trying to talk you out of doing stuff. I want to be very clear about that. All right? I'm going to encourage you to do stuff. But I want to be very honest in our communication about it. Is that okay? All right. Y'all with me today? Y'all just seem very quiet. And it's awkwardly haunting. All right, so I want you to stick with me. If you start getting lost, somebody starts dozing off, pinch them. All right, and we're going to be okay. It's going to be all right. I'm going to go somewhere with this. So here's the thing. It's going to require something from you. How many know? I want you to say this. It's going to require time, some money, maybe some missed opportunities in other areas of your life. You don't have to say that one because that was long. But if you discover something that breaks your heart and instead of looking and waiting for somebody else to do it, you realize maybe God's talking to me about doing it and you're going to say, God, I'm not going to look at my life and self-improvement. I'm going to look around me at the opportunities, the things that grip my spirit. And even if I step into it a little bit, it's probably going to cost me time. It's going to cost me money. It's going to cost me energy. I'm going to have to take something from something else and put it into this because we only have 24/7 to work with. Amen? All right. It's going to cost you some life. And that's a scary statement. Because when we think of terms of just time and a little bit of money, we don't grasp it that much, I think, because we think of those things as just set apart in little things. But when we start talking about, when you begin to step into what breaks your heart, it's going to cost you some life. And life is a big deal to us. And I think that we are by nature life preservers. We are by nature people who want to gather it in, not give it away. Our nature doesn't want to give life away. It wants to save it. I want to keep it. I want to hold on to it. That's why we have insurance for everything. That's why we have retirements. That's why we have airbags in everything, because we want to preserve. I eat a lot of preservatives, foods with preservatives, because I want to live longer. That's not how that works. Oh, I'm in trouble. Have y'all seen the commercial on TV where the guy has the, it's like an airbag bicycle helmet? Have y'all seen that? Anyone seen that? Where the guy's riding and he crashes the bike and he has like this little necklace on, and as he's falling, it just pops up around his head. Am I the only one that has seen this? All right, I'm thinking, okay, I need medicine. All right, and so, I mean, we'll airbag everything because we want to preserve life. We want everything safe, everything in its place, everything nice and neat and controlled. And that's just the way God works. It's really not. It's really not. See, that when you find that thing that breaks your heart, it's going to require something from you, and it's going to feel as if you're giving part of your life away. And that's very hard for people. And I say give your life away. And what I mean by that is the things that you define as your life: my time, my resource, my energy, my reputation. Those are the things that we think we add up and they equal life. And Jesus says, no. That's not what equals your life. And that's what creates, I think, the tension in our lives of saying, God, I need to live and make a living, and God, I want to do what you want me to do. And we're always trying to feed both things. And it creates this dynamic in our life that we war against ourselves. And we should all wrestle with that tension. I believe we should. And then Jesus comes along, and he tells us this, and we learn this: whoever devotes themselves to themselves will have nothing but themselves to show for themselves. I want to read that again. Whoever devotes themselves to themselves will have nothing but themselves to show for themselves. You see, I'm going to save my life. I can't afford to do that. I don't have the time for that. Pastor, I don't have the energies for that. And this is what our flesh naturally does, because we want to preserve it all. Jesus says, if that's what you have at the end of your life, then life has really been a loss. He just kind of comes and messes it all up, doesn't he? Because we want it all neat, we want it all boxed, and we want the nice bow on it. Jesus comes and says, that's not really what it's all about, guys. That an attempt to be a life preserver, to save it, we end up losing it. We end up giving it all away, and we have nothing to show for it. And if you want to do something interesting, go through the books of Matthew and Mark and follow Jesus and highlight in your Bible every time that it uses the word crowd. There were always people around him, always crowds, always weary and sick and lepers and smelly, and all of these people who wanted to be close to him and touch him, and always surrounding him, always being around him. And in the book of Luke, we're told one of these stories, Luke 14:25, and it says this: large crowds were traveling with Jesus, and turning to them, he said, and I love that, they were traveling with him. It would be like us finishing service at 12 o'clock, right on the button. And I say, God bless you, may keep you, may his face always shine upon you. And you go, oh, God bless you too, Pastor. And I go out and I get my wallet and I get my things and I put my keys in my pocket and I walk outside, and you're all kind of standing there. Okay, hey, God bless. I get in my car, you all run and get in your cars. I pull out and start driving to Olive Garden. Guess what? You pull out and you start driving to Olive Garden. I get out of the car in the parking lot. I'm walking in. I'm thinking, oh, my gosh, Chase, run in, quick, get our name in. You know, I wouldn't do that. I really would. But and so we go in. We finish eating, and I'm like, okay, guys, hey, God bless you. That's awesome. You guys have a great day. I'll see you on Wednesday. I'm going to be blessed. I'm excited about what God's going to do this week. I drive home. I go in. I put on my, I call them my fat clothes, and I put on my clothes, and I just get all comfortable in, my sweatshirt, and all of a sudden I kind of walk by, and I look out the window, and you're all standing there in the yard. Traveling with them. That's what they did. And why wouldn't they? Why wouldn't they? Look what he did. He healed the sick. He made blind see and deaf hear. He raised the dead. He fed those who had no food. And he did it in such a miraculous way. He's worth following. He's worth traveling with. Man, this is the greatest show on earth. But you see, Jesus didn't call us to travel with him. He called us to follow him. He says in verse 26, if anyone comes to me and does not hate father and mother, wife and children, brothers and sisters, yes, even their own life, such a person cannot be my disciple. Now Jesus here, when he uses the word hate, he's not speaking about hate the emotion. He's talking about hate in the context of this. Allowing Jesus to be the superior or the ultimate decision maker in your life instead of anyone or anything else. That's what he's saying. You got to choose me every time. Not 70-30, not 60-40, not even 80-20, not even 95-5. I have to be the ultimate decision maker for your life. That's how you live dead. That's how you let God lead. And he says this, such a person cannot be my disciple. You have to decide, listen to this, you have to decide with your life who's going to be in control. And that, my friends, is the difference between traveling with Jesus and following Jesus. So who's going to have the ultimate say in your life? See, to hate your own life isn't to feel bad about yourself. It's not to stand in front of the mirror and go, ooh, I just hate you. I don't like your hair, and I don't like your eyes, and I don't like your face. It is to decide once and for all who's going to have the final say about your life, about who you are and what you do. Deciding that you aren't going to be, you know, calling the shots, but rather you're going to submit your life to Jesus. And again, there's nothing wrong with setting goals. There's nothing wrong with having goals for your life. But Jesus addresses the tension of bettering ourselves and following him. And if you only write one thing down today, please let it be this next statement. The essence of following Jesus is self-denial, not self-improvement. It's not saying, I'm going to follow Jesus, and so I'm going to be best, I'm going to be better and better and better, and then I'm going to be good enough. No, it's not. It's about denying my flesh. And it's about following him and saying, God, you are in control of my life. That's what it's about. Jesus isn't against any self-improvement any more than he's against your mom or your father, your sons or your daughters, your husband or your wife. He's not against any of those things or you being the best that you can be. But we have to come to a place in our minds that we decide, am I going to travel with Jesus or am I going to follow him? And if I follow him, I need to submit to him and allow him to call the shots for my life. And then Jesus gives this statement that honestly, man, my goodness, statements like this will thin the crowd out pretty quickly. Verse 27, whoever does not carry their cross and follow me cannot be my disciple. That's harsh. That seems kind of tough, doesn't it? You can be my travel buddy. You can travel with me. You can eat the free food when I break out the loaves and the fish. You can watch me do miracles, and you know what? If you're not feeling well, and you're that, I'll heal you. But you are not, and please don't kid yourself, my disciple until you carry your cross and die to yourself and say yes to me. It sounds like a downer, doesn't it? It's like, Jesus, can't we just talk about unanswered prayer or answered prayer? Can't we just pick something a little more popular to talk about? Ooh, let's talk about heaven, because, man, we love talking about heaven. Talk about blessing. Let's talk about grace. There's so many positive things. And Jesus said, yeah, there are a lot of positive things, but you got to get this one right to embrace all of them. Are you traveling with me or are you following me? The thing is, as we read and we learn that Jesus wasn't trying to take something good away, it was his subtle or his not so subtle way of saying, I have something better for you. I'm making you a better offer. You'll never be able to say yes to my offer until you learn to say no to yourself. Mark 8:34, he says this. Then he called the crowd to him along with his disciples and said, whoever wants to be my disciples must deny themselves, take up their cross, and follow me. Listen, it isn't about self-improvement as much as it is about self-denial. God, it's not what my flesh wants. It's what you want. It's not about the appetites of my heart, God. I want to do what pleases you. For whoever wants to save their life, verse 35, will lose it. But whoever loses their life for me and for the gospel will save it. Well, of course we want to save our lives. It's human nature. That we're life preservers. We want to gather. We want to protect. What Jesus means here is this. Whoever lives every single day of their life and their ultimate priority is themselves and self-preservation. You see, we would never come out and say this, but every relationship that we have, be it spouse, be it kids, be it job, be it whatever, all of these things are a means to an end to preserve ourselves. If you didn't have to work, would you? Why do you work? So you can make it rain. I almost told a funny Sierra story, but I'm not. Daddy's growing up. A little. Listen, Jesus says that if that's your approach to life, whoever wants to save their life ultimately loses it. The very thing that you've spent your life trying to gain, you give up. But for those whoever loses their life for me, and it doesn't mean go and die like a martyr. It doesn't mean go and be ridiculous or do something foolish. He says, that's not what I'm talking about. It's bigger than that. This is when someone who is willing to say, Jesus, the answer is yes. Now, what's the question? Jesus, the answer is your way, not my way. Jesus, you're the supreme authority in my life, over my parents, over my children, and yes, even over what I desire myself. For whoever loses their life for me and for the gospel will save it. His invitation, his agenda will save their life. And this is not a call for followers to throw away their lives. It's not about martyrdom. It's not about irresponsibility. It wasn't about doing something just to make a point. It was about saying this, Jesus, I'm willing to allow you to lead me outside of me for something bigger and better than me. It was a call to give their lives away to something greater and something far more fulfilling than just living for ourselves. To deny yourself is to say no to you so you can say yes to something bigger than you. So here's the bottom line. Here's what we struggle with. As long as I'm all about me, I really can't be about anything else. Y'all are super quiet. Either you're getting it, well, we're not getting it at all. Listen, as long as I'm about me, I can never say yes to the things that are outside of me. And if you decide to wrestle with the question, what breaks your heart? You ultimately are going to be led away from yourself because it becomes about something greater than you. When you wrestle with what do I want people to line up at the end of my life and thank me for, ultimately, at some point, you have to lose you. The flesh must die that the spirit might get stronger and greater and that he might be in us and through us more. At some point in maturity, it isn't all about self-improvement, but it's about self-denial. And here's the thing, Jesus invites us into that kind of life. He offers to rescue you from the mundane. He offers to rescue us from the life that ultimately, when lived just for itself, is not going to have anything to show for itself but itself. And he says, I invite you to live something greater, bigger and deeper and wider and more fulfilling. You can live for yourself, but at the end of your life, it's a total loss because you're going to have nothing to show for it but you. Whoever devotes themselves to themselves will have nothing but themselves to show for themselves. And the truth of the matter is, that's not what we want to do. Nobody really wants to get to the end of their 40s or 50s or 60s or 70s and have their life look all wrinkle-free and everything is insured, everything's got airbags, everything looks like it's all great, everything's all buttoned up, everybody looks at you and goes, oh, they just have life all together. You get to the end, but at the end of the day, it's all about you. And I don't know all of you personally, but I do know this. You are not enough for you to live for. Our lives were made for more than us. And I said to you last week that there's more to you than a body and a balance sheet. There's more to you than self-improvement. And if you can still fit in the same jeans you wore in college, that's great. But honestly, who cares? I mean, am I lying? Maybe you hit all your financial goals, and that's great. You've got nice stuff. Isn't there more to life than that? And the thing is, we already know this. Bless you. We already know this. And when we take moments and we kind of push the voices away and we find that time with God, God speaks to that inside of each and every one of us. And it's uncomfortable and it's awkward and it makes us squirm a little bit. And that's that tension that I'm talking about, that I can live a life of hitting all my goals and I can live a life of gathering great stuff. And you know, we like it and it's nice because other people look and go, ooh, wow. But we wrestle with that thing inside that says, God is calling me to more. Into better, into deeper, into more valuable. And so have you ever thought that maybe you don't have time to do what that little voice is saying? The answer really is you know what that voice is saying, and so you fill your time up. Your time is yours. Your resource is yours. Your energy is yours. Your vision is yours. We will deny it and say yes to God. God only knows what he can do in us and through us. And I told you last week, we don't know what hangs in the balance of us saying yes to God. And the thing is this, all of us are invited by Jesus into that. And that's why I love being a Christian. I love this idea that even if you don't believe everything that I believe about Jesus, I don't know why everyone wouldn't want to take his word and live it out, because it's an invitation to significance. It's an invitation of living your life that's bigger than you and broader than you and goes beyond you. That it doesn't gather life in and hoard it as best we can, because we think, even though we don't say, we think whoever has the most at the end wins, but we don't. It's an invitation to step outside of yourself and to be unique. It's an invitation to make sure that at the end of your life, someone says, thank you. Because if it wasn't for you, this would not have happened in my life. If it wasn't for your sacrifice, if it wasn't for your self-denial, if it wasn't for your giving or the time that you gave, if it wasn't for the fact that you took some of your passion and you directed it towards my need, my life would not be what it is today. And so thank you for loving me. This is the invitation that Jesus gives to all of us to live a life of a purpose. Now, I grew up, I got saved when I was 8 years old. I've grown up in church, and I've heard probably a lot of sermons on purpose. tons of sermons on purpose. And I got to be honest with you. When I was younger and kind of high school, I didn't want to hear about purpose. I just kind of thought, you know, purpose, schmurpose. You know, I don't want to hear. You know what I cared about in high school? I want a car, I want a job, and I want a girlfriend. And I rationalized these all out to God. God, if I had a car, I could drive to church. And if I had a job, I could give. And if I had a girlfriend, I'd have somebody to pray with. If I had those things, God, I'd be happy and I would be fulfilled. Here's the thing. Here's what I learned. What each and every one of us will learn at some point in their lives is that when you get the stuff, no matter how successful you are in life, the heights or the depths, we all come back to this question in one way, shape, or form. Does any of this really matter? A hard question. Because it's a raw question. And I'm not saying if God's blessed you, be sad about it. Hey, I thank God God's blessed you. Just because you live in the biggest house on the block doesn't mean that your life is the fullest. You can actually be in this world, have the most stuff, and be the most empty. So to answer that question is this, does any of this matter? And the answer of that is if it's all about you, then no. Because that amazing car that you think makes you better than everybody else, someone else is going to have it. That beautiful home you live in that makes you better than everybody else, someone else is going to live in it. All that money you saved and all that money you put away and all that retirement and all that stuff, when you're dead and gone, your kids are going to fight over it. When we try to gather our life to preserve our life, Jesus says we end up losing it. So Jesus, your creator, knows that. And he knew that you do and try to and fail and succeed at. And at some point, you're going to look in the mirror and say, does it really matter? Is there a purpose? And Jesus says, yes. Yes, there's a purpose. But it's not found in self-improvement. You can be the most self-improved person on the planet and be empty. But you cannot give yourself away and be empty. See, our flesh tells us, gather, 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 you'll be full. But if you focus on yourself, you'll be empty. But if you empty yourself, you'll be full. Isn't that weird how that works? Have you ever experienced that? Because God created you for purpose. God created you for something more. And the thing is this, once you've been a part of a moment like that, where you could have kept and you could have held and you could have hoarded, you could have put it away for a rainy day, but instead you gave, you served, you loved. You reached outside of your world and touched somebody else's world, and you had that God moment, that thing where you say, I know this was the right thing to do, and I did it. Once you have that moment, isn't it hard to go back to the other way of living? Because you experience something authentic. You experience something that is real. And it's so hard to go back to the other way. And listen, even our Sunday experience that we have every Sunday morning, it's more than getting here early enough to get your parking spot, to get out of Sunday school fast enough to get your seat or your pew, and then slipping out early enough to beat the crowds to the restaurant. It has to be more than that. Because if that's all it is, that's not filling. There's nothing about that that's filling. But here's the thing, that there is more, and that's what makes it uncomfortable. Purpose is always found across the border of what's in it for me. People who say, oh, I just don't know what I want to be when I grow up. Well, you need to look in the mirror because you're grown up. Well, I just don't know what I want to be when I grow up. You got to find purpose. Well, where is purpose? Purpose is outside of you. You're not going to find purpose inside yourself. You're going to find it outside of you. Purpose is always just on the other side of your comfort zone. And do you know what Jesus called that? And John, he called it abundant life. Life outside of your life. That's what he called that. That when you give your life away, you find more life. That when you give your life away, you discover a different kind of life. That you give your life away and you discover a fuller life. That is abundant life, because he doesn't want you to get to the end of your life and find that it's all been about you. Now, I know this doesn't make sense in the flesh, but the best thing that you can do for you has little to do with you. Jesus says, trust me. Say no so that you can say yes to something bigger and better and broader than you. Step outside of your comfort zone, because therein you will find life. Give away so that you can be filled up. And sometimes what looks like a loss in the flesh will be your greatest gain. Those of you who have experienced this, you know exactly what I'm talking about. And I can see it on your face. And some of you who haven't, I can see it on your face. You're thinking, what? Somebody gave him a bad donut this morning. There is no such thing as a bad donut. Let me first get that out there. Listen, so what breaks your heart? Don't you want something to show for it all at the end? Would you be willing, and you don't have to pack up and move or sell anything, but would you be willing to continue to think and to chew and to pray about what breaks your heart? And maybe we can't change the world, but we can change somebody's world, or at least a slice of the world. Wrestle with what breaks your heart. And then, you know what? Look around and say, who's doing something to minister to it? Who's doing something to be a part of? Because whatever breaks your heart has probably been breaking somebody else's heart, and they're already giving their lives to it, that you can come alongside of them. And this is going to shock you, coming from a pastor. Maybe it's not in the church. If it's a ministry here, praise God, sign up, get involved, do something. But what if it's not? What if it's out in our community? Get involved, sign up, do something. Jesus is bigger than the church. Find out who they are. Find out what they're doing. Sign up, show up. How can I help? How can I serve? Why? Because I want my life to be bigger than just me. Because there's more to life than just me. Make the world a better place. You say no to you so that you can say yes to something bigger. To be a better person, to really make a difference, means saying no to ourselves. And that's what Jesus meant when he said deny yourself, meant say no to you. And as Christians, we believe that when you do, when you engage in the needs of others, when you decide to carry somebody else's burden, you have entered into the activity of God. I just want to do what God's doing. That's what God does. Where? Everywhere. Will it cost me? Yes. Time and energy and passion and sweat and blood and tears. Well, what if I try to do God's activity and somebody hurts my feelings? Let me help you with that. All of us are going to have our feelings hurt sometimes. Well, if it's God's will, it'll be easy. Somebody lied to you. God looked at this world and he saw sin separating us from him, and it broke his heart, and he didn't just change the channel, but he sent his son to the world to bear your sin and my sin. He sent Jesus outside of the comfort zone, way outside of what's in it for me. You see, whoever devotes themselves to themselves will have nothing to show but themselves for themselves. But if you devote yourself to more than yourself, you will have more than yourself to show for yourself. Life is big and it all needs Jesus. We don't fill it by gathering and gathering and gathering. It won't make you feel full, because I don't care how much you gather, you want to gather more. They did a study once where they took people who made different levels of income. And all the folks who made 25 grand said, oh, if I had 40 grand, I'd be content. But you know what they found is all the folks who made 40 grand said that if I made 60 grand, I'd be content. And all the folks who made 60 grand said if I made 80 grand, I'd be content. And the numbers kept going up and kept going up. Can I tell you something? Well, no, it means no matter what you have, it's never going to feel like enough. It just never will. But the contrary of that is the economy of God. Or even if I have a little, but I feel stirred, and I feel like God says, you know, you could use that, and you could buy a Starbucks, but you know what? That person needs that, and would you bless them? And you go over, and you give it to them, and you feel like you gave them $1 million, because you know, that's what God wanted me to do. And doesn't that make you feel more full? That's what he's saying. Those who try to save their life lose their life. And those who will give their life away for the gospel, save it. Keep chewing on what breaks your heart, and let's truly live a life and at the end have something to show for it, because it matters that you're here and the purpose of your heart matters because God has it for you. Amen? Listen, thank you for coming out on a day that a lot of people could have stayed home, but you didn't, and that means something to me. Thank you for showing up. And I hope today you were blessed by our worship, by the word, and that God has done something in your spirit to stir you, to go home. Growing up, we had a phrase, sometimes you got to chew the fat. I pray that all of you get to go home and chew the fat, what the word of God is saying to us. Because the world says, gather, 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 but we never feel full. Jesus says, love and give and serve and bless. And he fills our cups overflowing. Lives are changed because we find the purpose. That's the goodness of God.